after a while, I was like, wait, this is good. Well, I want to appreciate this.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're going to talk about the third season of Daredevil from Marvel and Netflix. Mark Sherman's back, as always, to talk with us about this show and what it do.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello.
And Molly Glover.
Oh, hello. It's me, Molly Glover, again.
And we are recording from Deepwood Mott, the home of House Glover, where you may hear a lively puppy. Maybe
who might puke on something or pee on something.
She's just full of bodily fluids tonight. And they're all coming out to say hello. You may also hear noisy Bengal cats or some coughing because some of us are recovering from colds. So it's going to be just an audio treat.
All kinds of bodily fluids.
Yeah.
Oh, from all sorts of animals. Who's that out here, Nick? Speaking of audio excitement.
Humming is our returning guest, Mark Sherman.
Yeah. It's okay. You don't need to introduce me because it's definitely been more than 5 minutes.
Right. We did record this episode and the last episode about Iron Fist Season 2 back-to-back. We're having just a Marvel Netflix night, which brings me to what we're talking about in this episode, which is Daredevil Season 3.
Daredevil Season 3!
I am going to remind you that we are going to spoil the shit out of it. We've seen all of Daredevil Season 3. It's been out for over a month. Watch it on Netflix. Put on an eye patch if you need to, if you don't have Netflix. But Daredevil's good stuff. The third season of Daredevil takes place after Defenders, where Matt kind of apparently dies.
Yeah, it sure seems like he dies. He gets the absolute shit beat out of him.
And then he gets blowed up.
Well, he gets a building dropped on him.
Yeah.
Right. He's under the 101 Hand Plaza, whatever the building is.
Don't they show him, though, at the very end of Defenders? And they go, get Maggie or whatever.
Like, yeah, they show him in the church.
In the church, yeah.
Oh, God, what is the name of that building? I just had that.
Nakatomi Plaza.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Right. You know, the Hand Building on Hand Street and the Hand District.
One Hand Place.
Right. This season, Matt is out of the Daredevil costume. He's back to his original black mask.
Yeah, for the entirety of it, isn't he?
Yeah, they had to cut him out of the Daredevil costume. Mm-hmm.
But we do see the costume.
We do.
We do see the costume.
Or a costume.
Yeah. So, let's see. The series kind of starts with Matt in recovery and not in full control of his powers, in recovery and hiding in a church, because if the church knows one thing, it's how to hide people from the police and not report them.
Hello! Timely.
Yeah, they have a lot of experience doing that. Not during the Holocaust, though.
No.
But Matt's not a Jew. So but Matt's, that's
right.
Yeah.
He's a good Catholic boy, so they've got his back. Wilson Fisk is back, too.
Oh, shit.
Motherfucker! Kingpin is the primary antagonist this season again, like he was in Season 2.
But isn't he's in prison in the jail?
Beginning. He is.
Is he though?
He's in federal palm-in-the-ass prison, actually, Tim.
For life. I mean, he's facing, like, 100 years
but
or something.
But as always,
like
he is a consummate businessman, and he knows how to make... He actually does know the art of the deal.
If the deal is like kidnapping your family and holding them for hostage until you give him what he wants, that's
getting
a deal.
Yourself stabbed so that you can get moved into a cushy flat somewhere else and slowly arrange to assume the powerful role that you had before you were put away.
Fisk's plan this season is fucking masterful. Like,
it's good.
I mean, even
it's
though
Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, yeah. As it's rolling out, you know, you can see it happening. And you're just, like, in awe. It's one of the few times that... Because we talked last episode about how Davos in Iron Fist is a relatable villain.
Right.
In that you can understand where he's coming from, and you can see his point of view. Mm. And Wilson
Fisk... It's all
Fisk,
emotional, isn't it?
Yeah,
with Davos?
Yeah.
He's not thinking
yeah.
ahead.
You get it,
because
you've been, he's passionate. Yeah. But Fisk, you can't relate to him because he is a fucking monster. And the moment you think that you can relate to him because he's just a guy who's been through so
he's
much.
He's just a guy who's in love with a
girl. Right? Just, yeah. The minute you think you can relate to him, he reveals himself to be utterly monstrous, murderous, vile,
and even more
and
monstrous
without,
than you thought he was
yes,
capable
yeah.
of being.
Yes. It's, he, God, it's good.
So, well, let's talk about some of the things Kingpin does this season. To get out of prison
yeah.
and to rise to power again.
Well,
and
how many lives did he systematically destroy so he can build them back up in a way that better suited him? At least three that we could see.
Countless FBI agents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Several that are detailed very closely, but, I mean, there are a bunch of people
yep.
at that table, at that meeting, that all are understand what's happening to them.
Yeah.
Presumably he has dirt on all of them. Or is their families or whatever.
And it's dirt that he has manufactured from the ground up. He gave people problems.
Yeah.
Forced them into impossible choices and then owned them completely.
Yeah. The main FBI guy, his name escapes me.
Nadim.
God. He orchestrated the loss of his sister's
health insurance. Yep.
To cut, I mean,
it's almost implied too that he gave her the cancer,
right?
Almost.
Yeah. Some Guardians of the Galaxy 2 shit.
Yeah.
You know, Wilson Fisk is an argument for universal health care.
If
we had universal health care, he couldn't have blackmailed that FBI agent into all this death and violence.
Mm. I appreciate that we had that there were all these, so like right away the FBI agent who gets called into his boss's office and she's like, hey, we can't raise you up, we can't give you a promotion because you've been flagged because of your debt.
Mm-hmm.
And because of your debt and the debt he has incurred on account of paying his sister's
yeah.
health bills.
Which is real.
Oh,
yeah. I mean,
it's a
real thing.
Slow
and,
reveal.
Yep. And
yeah.
so she's like, we can't, I'm sorry, I'm just telling you now that they won't allow that because your credit score is so low, it means you're open to compromise. Like
right.
you could be compromised by outside forces.
Your career is never going to progress really.
Yeah, we can't progress your career. Which in turn leads him to work for the Kingpin or to do things that he would otherwise not do, thinking his career won't go anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, he starts taking risks
yep.
to
yep.
make it happen despite
yes.
the fact that the FBI won't let it happen.
The irony being that the director woman who tells him this
is on
Fisk's payroll and has been the whole time and even says
and
when she reveals...
knows he's being set up
and
for
even
this.
Says
yeah.
in the reveal, I told you, like...
It
leads
makes,
you
yep.
open to compromise. I tried to warn you. And it's like, oh, man. She was trying to tell you, walk away.
Yeah.
Like, walk the fuck away because here's me.
Yep.
And I can't tell you I'm stuck, but I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And
he's
yeah.
had a finger on you for years.
Years.
She said.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's,
absolutely.
It's great.
It is wonderful.
So Kingpin actually does rat on one of the other crime families
mm-hmm.
in New York and gives the FBI some very useful information to make himself a resource, taking out the competition and putting him in a position to combine the crime families of New York under him as the Kingpin. It's masterful. It's great. This is really like... The first season was like a Wilson Fisk origin story, but this season was like how he becomes
the Kingpin.
Right.
And I think this is the first time they name check him as the Kingpin, or did
it
they
is.
Do that in
nope.
the okay.
I think this is the first time they actually say Kingpin.
Which is his FBI code name.
Oh, that's the best fucking part.
Yeah.
Speaking of FBI code names, I think my favorite thing of this season was Bullseye.
This is the most terrifying version of Bullseye that I have ever seen. Like, that was deeply distressing. Like, the comics get to some of his instability, but to a degree you always feel like he's sort of in control, and that maybe he's not necessarily enjoying it. It's just the skills that he has. He's a professional.
Well, maybe he likes killing, but only because he's so good at it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're really super good at something and you enjoy doing it, the moral part of it isn't even a question. Yeah. It's just where his skills are.
Yeah, well, my favorite, and I would argue the best Bullseye story that's ever been written was a 2-issue series that came out in the mid-2000s. Yeah, Bullseye, Perfect Game,
I think it was. Perfect Game, that's what it is.
And it was
the baseball one.
Yeah. And it was all told from the perspective of a nerdy baseball statistician to, I think, Ben Urich.
Yep.
About how he thinks that Bullseye dropped out of killing people for like 2 years and had himself a minor league career to pitch a perfect game just to see if he could.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And I feel like they tied into that in the show.
Absolutely.
With his origin story with the baseball and killing his coach and all that. Yep. Like, as soon as we saw that, I was like, oh, it's the fucking baseball story for Bullseye. It's so great.
So real quick. All right, so Tim, you didn't know, obviously, about... I'm guessing you haven't read a lot of Daredevil. You didn't know about Bullseye, necessarily.
I know about Bullseye,
did you? Yeah. Did you? Could you tell that was Bullseye? Because, for example, my mom, who doesn't know anything about, like, the comics, really, was super, like, she couldn't figure out when at the end my brother was like, oh, shit, that's Bullseye. She didn't know who that was. And so, like, I feel like that the whole reveal was, like, this really duality of, like, for people who know who Bullseye is and who didn't.
Well, when you get to that scene where it's the flashback and he puts that hat on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And before that, you see him throwing the ball at the wall and hitting exactly the same spot.
Yeah, just over and over.
Over and over again, to the point that there's now a dent in this brick wall.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, oh shit, he's Bullseye.
Sure. I forget he was in that terrible movie with Ben Affleck.
He was.
Yeah.
Bullseye.
Yeah, Bullseye.
With it carved into his forehead. So... I have a question for you guys. I've seen people debate back and forth on this. The powers, the skills, as shown in this season, is Bullseye superhuman?
That's a very good question. You know, in the comics, they waffle back and forth about that sort of thing. I think in here they were kind of doing the same thing. He is clearly above average in ability, but it's not entirely clear that he's superhuman.
Mm-hmm.
At least not until the end of the movie or the series in that one final sequence.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that they were setting him up from childhood, from very early childhood, to have, to a degree, trained in this, certainly innate talent, but because of his general instability...
He has a knack in it.
And I think it's the combination of a knack and, frankly, his psychosis that allowed him to get even better than he would have been without that.
Yeah, that stuff with him and him being, I mean, him being a psychopathic little kid, and the stuff with his therapist and like, you know, the like, I didn't, you know, what, you know, how did you feel when he died? Like, you know, I felt good and powerful. Like, I felt happy.
Killed those,
like,
animals.
And all the other shit.
So what do you think, Molly? Superhuman? Or...
Man, I think that...
Is it talent?
I think that, in the MCU, I think he's just talented.
Okay.
Because I think that the only way that he could have this be a superpower would be if he was a mutant.
Okay.
Because there aren't really just innate powers that kids have.
Right.
In the MCU, really.
Everyone has an origin story. Something happened.
We don't know that he wasn't also hit with a bucket of toxic waste at the same time Matt was dumped with waste.
Like Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
The biggest question mark for me is, Matt, we know, is somewhat superhuman.
They flat out say it.
And Bullseye is able to fight him to a standstill and even maybe best him.
Right.
And, yeah.
And, you know, and Matt talks about how he's just as fast as he is. And also, some of the stuff he throws, he gets results that feel like more than knack to me. Mm-hmm. Well, like when he throws that scissors, you know, like what, a foot?
Yeah.
He's able to penetrate it basically up to the handle.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you get that kind of momentum without...
Well, and you're breaking glass panes with, pearls or something?
Rosary beads.
That rosary beads.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's,
or,
that's some Shaolin monk shit right there.
The most ridiculous to me was when Matt broke into his apartment.
Yeah.
And he's looking at Matt's reflection in the windows across the street... Mm. And ricocheting bullets off the fire escape back at his building where Matt is.
Yeah.
Like, that is superhuman. I'm not saying it's magic or mutants or powers, but I feel like, by definition, that is an above-human ability.
You're doing some mental trigonometry, literal trigonometry,
yeah.
Getting that happening.
It seems impossible, but it all is... You can hand wave it away and say
bit.
It's talent and say some of it's luck, maybe. But when he starts picking those crystals off the chandelier and putting them together in his hand, like you're like, oh, it's on. This motherfucker's gonna, yeah. And there's times when he's just throwing shit wildly. Like,
a fucking stapler. Sequence in the cubicles.
Yeah,
where he's grabbing everything.
He throws a collection plate
at
Matt, I think, and it doesn't. Kill him. It wouldn't kill him, but you can hear it hit him, and it's something he has to block.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fury of blows.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he curves it, too.
Yeah.
You know, there's... It's not just like, I can throw things straight. I can give them momentum and arc and get around corners. It's...
Which fucks with Matt's radar.
Is Bullseye Gambit?
No, he's not Swamp Trash. I would love nothing more from this season than to see someone make a YouTube video that is just a supercut of everything Bullseye threw at everyone.
Yeah.
There you go.
It would be 10 minutes of throwing things violence, and I'm really on board to watch it.
I mean, that's basically what that the fight in the newspaper was, right?
Yeah, when he... So... Bullseye is the only person that wears the Daredevil suit this whole season.
Yeah.
When he's framing Daredevil.
Matt doesn't have it?
Well,
he buried it.
They cut it off of Matt when he goes to the church to be cared for.
Midland Circle.
That's
the name of the building.
Jesus Christ, Matt.
They cut it.
He got there.
They cut off the original suit.
The helmet was crushed, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the only reason there's a second suit, of course, is because Fisk arranged for a second
right.
third suit.
Because the guy who makes the suits...
Melvin Potter.
Is in love with his
P.O.
P.O. And Fisk threatens...
Her and to
kill her and to expose her and everything. So
and Melvin is
so bad for Melvin, man.
That's his lot. Melvin is vulnerable.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And that was displayed to be the case in the first season of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Matt puts his thumb on those exact same pressure points
that
Wilson Fisk does.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He, we didn't see the same level of Easter egg stuff with Melvin's workshop mm-hmm. this time. Like last time we saw like some Stiltman pants.
Yep.
But there were the saw blades.
Yep.
Yep.
He had the his shirt, his sweater had the pattern from the gladiator suit underneath it.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the theme of this season was about what about you can be exploited. And because we had the FBI agents who obviously all had those things.
Foggy's family.
Was exploited by his family. Karen, because of her past and her fear of that coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that she did where she killed that guy.
Yeah.
That got exploited. Daredevil got exploited in the sense that, you know, finding out that Maggie was his mom.
Yeah.
Like, shook him to the core.
And that was like his like past and not that exploit that fucked him up for a while. Like that really got to him.
The other thing that exploits him is Fisk is a planner and he is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's reacting the whole time.
Yeah. And also I think, you know, to a large degree, Fisk has his weakness, that which is Vanessa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is his weakness, 100%.
Yeah.
And like he falls for a lot. Because it's like, I need to make it, he's doing everything he's doing for her, to get her back, to keep her safe. And the only times that he overreacts and goes against his plan or, you know, changes the plan.
Cuts off someone's head with a car door.
Yeah, is because he thinks that something's happened to her or she's in danger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that makes him lose his shit.
Or
and
that's when she asks him to.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so it's really this whole season of like, what about you is your weakness? What about you can be exploited?
Matt, what do you guys think about Matt's weaknesses in the beginning of the show, where he is the rebelling against God or the dealing with his faith will always be a theme for Daredevil. But what about how in the beginning of this he basically says goodbye to Matt being Matt Murdock? And his life, and his friends, and his family, and all that. She's...
Dogs.
Yep, dogs.
Sorry, distraction.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
Right, you know, it's... I don't know, it's one of those things where it's like, that seems like such an integral part of like Daredevil's story as of him trying to figure out whether or not he's more devil than man.
Yeah.
And they've done it a few times, but honestly, I just never find that to be a particularly thrilling or interesting thread to pull on. Every time that they do it, every time he decides he's going to be Daredevil and no longer Matt Murdock, shit like Shadowlands happens.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Mistakes just happen. The dichotomy of the character is what makes him work is that duality of being both the man and the devil. Because Matt Murdock is the humanity that Daredevil doesn't allow him. It's the person who works to be paid in chickens. It's, you know, it's the protector of the community, but also the defender of the community.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Defender. I more so than like Batman or even Superman, the two sides of the coin of justice that is Matt Murdock and Daredevil is such an important part of the character and the stories that he's in.
Mm-hmm. Well, because neither one of them are the costume like you get with Batman or Superman. You know, Superman and Batman, as the argument goes, are Superman and Batman, and the masks that they wear are their fallible humans. You know, but Matt Murdock cannot properly exist without Daredevil and vice versa.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's something that differentiates Marvel Secret Identities in general from DC Secret Identities. You know, Peter Parker is always fighting this battle between being Peter Parker and being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Daredevil and Matt Murdock.
But Captain America is always Steve Rogers, Captain America. Mm-hmm. Whether he's in the uniform or not, he's always that same guy.
Yep.
That's true. I mean, it's not universal.
No, I'm just saying that's even different from DC.
Yep.
Because
he doesn't have a mask that he wears.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I would say it's different as well from most DC stuff. Certainly not all.
Well, obviously, you know, this is Geeks Without God and the Catholic, the, you know, forsaking God, whatever.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That stuff, it's like, I know that's Daredevil, and I'm still kind of like, yeah, whatever, it's dumb.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have to start, Matt's got to start at the bottom in this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the way Fisk gets leverage on it.
Mm.
It's true because it's what's exploitable.
Because he makes dumb decisions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But nowhere near the dumb decisions he makes once he meets Mila.
Yeah. We
That's going to be an interesting season if we ever get there.
We also had a lot of Karen Page.
Yeah.
Who we last saw in Punisher.
Shockingly not dead yet.
Holy crap. As soon as we knew it was Bullseye in this season, I'm like, oh, they're going to kill Karen Page.
And
awesome.
And then they were the church and everything.
Yeah.
Like,
But they already kind of ruined some of Bullseye's, big reveals with the Elektra and the Psy and all that stuff. Like, they're clearly subverting some of that, but even still.
I was expecting her to get a club in the chest.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
In the comics, that's how she dies.
Right.
Yeah.
She gets a baton thrown squeezed through her chest.
In the story arc that most informs this one.
Born Again?
Yep.
Born Again was,
Wait, was Born Again the Elektra one?
Or no.
Was that... But that was Frank Miller and... Was that Mazzucchelli that did that one?
I don't know. That's, Bullseye is responsible for the death of at least three women in Matt's life.
And gloats about it regularly.
And one of them came back twice, so, you know, because Elektra can't stay dead and or not a Skrull. But, right. So I was really expecting Bullseye to take something from Matt. And I guess what he took was the priest.
His father figure, essentially. Yeah, his surrogate.
Yeah, the closest thing to a man.
I mean, they played that same card. They just killed a different character than you thought they were going to kill.
Well, and certainly they gave us motivation for Bullseye in the future to come back, because he literally says, I will not stop until Karen Page is dead.
Yeah.
Because that's what he was using to keep in the good favor, the good graces of Wilson Fisk after he had failed twice, at least, at that point.
What I really liked about that obsession or that dedication for him was, in the comics, one of the first times Bullseye really, gets mad and hates Daredevil is when he misses.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a shot at Daredevil and he misses, because Bullseye never misses. And, it was a point of pride and it was an offense to him. And it kind of drove him a little nuts for a while that Daredevil would dare to cause him to miss his target. Maybe he was shooting someone else, I think. But, in this, he misses plenty, but he gets his target. He accomplishes his mission.
Yep.
He does the thing he was set out to do. And in this, his miss was not killing Karen Page.
Mm-hmm.
And it did cause, a similar obsession. And it did cause him to lose his shit.
Yeah,
a bunch more. I liked that.
Who was your favorite character in this season? Who did you enjoy? Whenever they were on screen, you were like, yeah, I'm glad. Because for me, it was Bullseye.
Bullseye.
Yeah.
Fisk, though, always steals the show whenever he's in every scene.
It's the way in which he speaks.
He's got a cadence, for sure.
Vince D'Onofrio is amazing.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine. He is just who I'm going to picture forever now when I picture Kingpin and I hear his voice.
The voice he created for the character is so pitch
he
perfect.
Starts so
it has
quietly.
Weight and momentum to it that really.
He's a
orator. The
and there's an insecurity underneath all of it, which is so nuanced and interesting for the character.
Yeah,
you never see him as vulnerable and weak as when he's searching for the words with Vanessa.
But you always hear the abused, neglected little chubber kid that he was.
Yeah.
Hear that in him, especially when he talks to Vanessa.
Yeah.
You hear that self doubt and that no one can love me, and
I will say that Bullseye is great and Fisk is great. The character that I thought in terms of just super well acted and in terms of having just this tragic killer arc was Nadim.
Oh yeah. Nadim was great.
I mean, just
I feel
the
bad
way,
for that guy.
Because he's a good guy.
And went on such a journey
genuinely
all the way
a good
through
person.
To the end of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's like he just gets forced into doing the most horrible things, and he hates it every minute of it. And that's part of Fisk's downfall, is this presumption that you can leverage anybody
Yeah.
That everybody can be pushed to a point where they will not dare walk it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Nadim was that person that his pride was such that he believed that he could do the same thing to Nadim, that he could squeeze the integrity out of him.
Yeah.
He couldn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was going to bring down Kingpin? Well, Daredevil or maybe Karen Page, maybe even Foggy Nelson. But not this FBI agent that he wholesale owns.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he believed he wholesale owned the guy,
yeah.
And he didn't. Also, Vanessa's not there for very long.
No.
But you get to the end of this season, and it's like, I'm looking at this and thinking the wrong Fisk is free.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's no idea.
That's definitely a thing in the comics. She's like, yeah.
When he goes to jail for a while in the comics, she takes over and she is far more ruthless than he is.
Yeah.
Well, and you can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just going
to
be...
Well, that speech that she has when they finally have their heart-to-heart and she was like, what drew me to you was your brutality.
Yeah.
I could sense it in you and I wanted to be part of it. This was
Your world.
Yeah.
This world is what I want. Like,
and this was someone who clearly... had these impulses but never knew what they were until she met someone as bad as Fisk. And it awakened something in her that she only wanted to embrace further. And the first thing she does when let in on that is order someone's death.
Mm-hmm.
The painting, man.
Yeah.
The whole painting thing was such a great... It showed the relationship between Bullseye and Fisk, between Bullseye Vanessa, and between Vanessa and Fisk.
And even Fisk's, where he will draw lines.
No, yeah.
He was like, well,
that was
Vanessa wouldn't want me to kill her, so I won't kill her. Because he had a misconception about the woman he married.
Yeah.
He thought that she was better than this world, more pure,
He had to protect her
from
world.
Who he was.
Yeah.
As opposed to, she is. So when it's like, Bullseye is making this deal, I won't hurt Vanessa as long as you agree to leave my friends alone. You're like, yeah, I mean, I understand the deal, but I don't think you understand the deal you just made.
Also, speaking of someone who had an awakening when she met someone, Maggie's arc, small though it was pretty great. Mm-hmm. Finding out that she was, you know, so having gone to St. Kate's, we actually, there are still... I know, in this day and age, there are still fledgling nuns, and they were going to school with us, and, you know, a lot of them were coming from other countries, and they would, you know, come to St. Kate's to get...
They don't get a nun springer?
No, there's not a nun springer.
Yeah.
And so, it was really cool to see how they would, how she was like, oh, we're just going to go check it out. And these three nuns like, no, we're just going to go look. We're just initiates. We haven't taken our vows yet. And how everyone around them is like, what the fuck? Like these, like, you know, 17-year-old nuns are at this fight. And she sees, you know, Jack Dempsey.
Holland Jack Murdoch.
I don't know why I thought Dempsey, because that's a real fighter.
Right.
She saw Jack Murdoch fight and just some part of her was just like...
Oh, we know which part.
Oh, yeah.
You could hear the waterfall turn on.
And she's like, okay, yeah. He's like, just put this mouth guard in me and give me water. Okay. Like,
oh, you want me to mop your brow and tend to your wounds like they did with Jesus.
Right?
Like, that's all I can think of.
And so then, of course, you know, she gets knocked up, and then it was like...
Yeah.
And I loved that it wasn't like, oh, no, she had to go back to the church, or oh, no, she realized she made a mistake. No, she had postpartum depression.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she had it bad. And she was just, that scene of her just sitting, and the baby's just screaming, and she's just sitting, and Jack's like holding the baby, is holding, you know, Matt, and being like, kind of like talking at her, and she's just seeing nothing, was like... Oh, I've got mama friends, that was their reality. Like, just, I heard my baby crying, and all I could think was, who cares? Like, it's just a disconnect.
It's so much better and more interesting than it just being a God thing.
Yeah. And her feeling, and then all her guilt about Matt is wrapped up in both forsaking God to fuck Jack Murdoch, and then forsaking Matt to go back to God, and then, you know, Jack dying and her still not doing anything, and him coming to the orphanage and her still not doing, and like, just this really great complex ball of guilt and
her
love and
clear regret
terror.
For having made the choice to go back to the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also regret at, like, because what could she have done? Like, what was she supposed to have done with him? And, like, and all of it. It was just all so good.
On top of all this depth, one more before we get moved to the next part, actually. I like Foggy Nelson as a character. I like Foggy Nelson when he's not just the useless sidekick.
Yep.
Foggy Nelson is a talented lawyer. He's a smart guy. And he understands Matt in such a way that he can help Matt against his will in ways that Matt doesn't even understand and make him a better Matt and a better Daredevil.
Yeah. Foggy Nelson is the guy because Matt doesn't plan for shit.
Right. Yep.
Foggy Nelson is the dude who can play on Fisk's chessboard.
Foggy Nelson's the one that put Fisk in jail in the first season, Matt.
A brilliant fucking lawyer who's got a mind like a steel trap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone underestimates him because he's a big old teddy bear aw shucks kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, his whole family looks like they're related to that
actor. Oh my god, kept expecting one of them to be like, oh my god, faggy. Like, they look like Boston.
Yeah.
Like they look Boston even though they're from New York.
Yeah. Foggy was actually the character that I would name as the most interesting arc for me.
Sorry, we didn't mean to skip you.
Yes, that's all right. We've all got lots of things to say.
I guess the point is there are a lot of really well-defined characters
bad characters.
To say that this was a return to form from season one is repeating what everyone else has so far said in reviews, but like, no joke, like, this is extremely high quality writing.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. Everyone is worth following and checking in on. Those backstory episodes that they did where main character, only one person was focused on, like Karen for an entire episode, was super interesting to find out what was going on with her. All
the flashback. It was like a whole episode, basically.
The whole episode on Bullseye's past that was in black and white for the most part.
This was my favorite episode of Marvel, or my favorite season of Marvel television, for me, it narrowly beat out Jessica Jones season one, which up until this time was my favorite season. And it was just masterful.
Yeah.
I usually...
Peak Daredevil.
Full disclosure, I'm usually like... You know, around about the mid-season, I'm always just kind of like, like, no, we got to keep watching this. Like, we got to finish it. And it's like, all right. You know, but there was never a moment in this season where I was like, no, I don't want to watch anymore. Yeah, I wish we'd take a break.
This was a solid fucking piece of work.
Starting with Defenders 2, they've stopped jerking us around with the mid-season villain swap.
Yeah.
Which I think improves the flow of the series.
Yeah, and they did it a little bit in Luke Cage season 2, but like, not in any major way. They added a villain and made us change focus, but they didn't swap villains.
And the villain that, you know, Bushmaster kind of just changed his...
The Bushmaster.
The other thing we haven't talked about at all, we've been talking about the writing and the characters and the acting. It had really good action.
Yeah.
They're really good action. Good fight scenes.
Which has been a standard for Daredevil.
We got the prison fight that was like a 13-minute fight in the prison with Matt Murdock, not Daredevil. That was great. There was really solid violence that you would expect or hope for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Should we go to...
Do anyone have a favorite part or one last thing they want to mention before we go to five questions?
I do not.
The final thing I want to mention is I thought that all of the makeup was really good. They did a good job making people look, not just the beat up makeup, but like Karen looking like stressed and sick and tired, Maggie looking distraught. Just kind of everyone, like Kingpin looking, the difference between when he was in prison versus when he was in his penthouse prison.
Yeah.
Like they did a really good job with the subtle, realistic makeup that made people look like they were having different things happen. It was great.
Yeah, I think they really fucked up when they killed Ben Urich in the first season.
Oh, yeah.
And the only reason that Karen survived is because they don't have a replacement for him yet.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Well, they could always bring in his son, and then we can bring him into Spider-Man, and then we could do some Hobgoblin stuff. I think, in the comics, Bullseye gets some adamantium in him. and he comes back from a really bad injury, which is kind of almost how they end this with him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's not dead. I think it would be a waste not to have more Bullseye, especially with Daredevil, but not necessarily exclusively with Daredevil. Like how they brought back Crossbones for Captain America. I think that'd be great. I also would really, really love to see... if I could pick one character to make the jump from Netflix to the movies, it would be Kingpin for a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Because the seriousness of this portrayal of Kingpin with the wacky hijinks of our very young and very good Spider-Man, I think would be great.
And Kingpin gets a lot of play in Spider-Man.
He's a great Spider-Man villain, too. Yeah. I think he was a Spider-Man villain before he was a Daredevil villain?
I'm a little fuzzy on that, but Spider-Man villains traditionally are all animals.
Oh, yeah. That's the theme of them.
I think he's crossed over in a different...
Yeah.
He might have been Avengers before that, but I'm fuzzy.
Yeah, yeah. So, let's go on to five questions.
Five questions!
What do we got, Molly?
Yeah, we have five questions from Maren Allgaard.
Hey, Maren.
Maren is the best, and I never know... I think it's Maren. Yeah? We're all like, I know I always get it wrong.
I will pronounce it exactly the
same way.
So
here's the thing.
Do.
Yeah.
Last time we said it wrong, she corrected us and said it's pronounced the way it's spelled.
Maren.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I second-guessed myself.
Yeah, I always second-guess myself.
And I feel like a total asshole because she's really sweet and nice.
She's the best, honestly. She's one of my favorite people in the whole world. So I apologize if we just fucked it up. To be fair, I've cleaned up dog pee 3 times tonight. So I feel like I got
it's a high-stress situation here at Deepwood Mod.
Anyway, she says, I only thought about answering your last two sets of questions and I never set anything in, so I figured it was finally time to do this.
You know, you can still send in answers and we'll read them.
That's true. All right. Question one. How do you feel when you start reading a post someone has made and it is unexpectedly religious? Do you keep reading or do you feel like you have to move on? So someone's post surprise Jesuses you. I will say I did a ceremony at the Renaissance Festival once, and I always tell my people who I'm doing ceremonies for, this one was for strangers, that I'm a secular officiant, and I don't want any mention of gods or goddesses or energies or spirits, and if you want that, I can recommend somebody, right? Because I've got pagan people and Christian people and all the people I know, but this couple was like, that's fine, we don't want, no, we're great with that, and then they wrote their own vows, and their own vows were super Jesus. And it was like, Jesus sent you to me, and when I look at you, I see his works. And like, and I just stood there holding my book, being quiet and calm, but like, part of me wanted to be like, nope, we're done.
Wedding's over.
Wedding's over. I'll sign your certificate, but we're fucking done.
You know, most of the friends that I have that are religious, I know it.
Yeah.
And... so when I see their posts that are religious in nature, it doesn't bother me.
What if it starts out being reasonable and then there's a see more and you click it and then it turns to Jesus? That's the question I think here. Like it starts out being like, I believe in climate change and I think that science is important. And what I want to say about that, and then it's see more, and it's like, is that Jesus is the reason we have all these things.
Well, if it was that, then I'd be like, oh, God, they're stupid, and I don't feel like getting into an argument on the internet.
But are they ignorant?
But most of the time... flashback! Or, sorry, callback. In general, it's like, if it starts getting super gaudy in a way that I just am not interested in, I'll move on.
Yeah, like John Paul.
I think... it depends. If it's one of two extremes, I might keep reading. If it's super, super low-key, like, not very religious, they just are like, thank God for whatever, blah, 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 God. Like, maybe I'll just keep reading because it's fairly innocuous and not a big deal. The flip side to that is, if they are being obscenely religious in a way that is distasteful and or awful to me, I will probably keep reading so that I can screen cap it and send it to Molly and we can say snarky things about the person. Anywhere in between, I probably will just skip it at that point.
All right.
Mark.
Generally, if I start reading something, I commit to it if no other reason than I like to have my own internal rages and dialogues at these things. even if I know that just continuing to read it is going to result in, like, eye-roll related headaches,
nah.
You know, I'm generally inclined to just keep reading. I usually won't engage, though. That seems like a mistake.
Yeah.
Unless, again, unless they're using their religion as a weapon to, you know, to the detriment of other people that I love and respect.
Word.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Question number two. Question number two is, is our sole purpose on Earth to live and die, or is there some reason that we are all here?
A while ago in another episode, I talked about a favorite quote of mine from Reed Richards from Fantastic Four.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And that's that if there's no God, there's no devil, then no heaven, no hell, then nothing we do matters. And if nothing we do matters, then the only thing that matters is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I am like an incredibly optimistic nihilist, maybe, in that like I don't think that anything really matters except for that which you give meaning. And so like you have to like create meaning, and you have to create purpose, and you have to figure out what that means for you and how that you go about with that philosophy in the world. So
yeah, that's good.
I think there's purpose, but you know, the purpose, it's got to come from you.
I think the reason we are here is to enjoy life. And maybe that's the hedonist in me. But I genuinely think that's the reason, is to enjoy ourselves. But not at the expense of others.
Sure.
If we want to go for the purely biological reason we are here to propagate the species. That's why we're all here.
Boo!
But I mean, that's the biological.
I know.
That's the biological drive of all animals, right?
That is a perfectly true on paper reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm here to eat food and get laid.
On paper, that is why we are here. And yet, I think that we can and do give meaning to our lives beyond that. It is the something that we have based on the intelligence we have developed, that we can prescribe meaning to our lives beyond living and dying and propagating the species.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of awesome, honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what about you?
You know, I generally fall along the same lines that that Nick and Tim have stated here. It's like, I don't believe that we are here for any particular reason other than those that we invent for ourselves. My reason to exist is to increase my level of happiness without affecting anybody else's
pleasure. That seems, but not at the expense of your neighbor.
Yeah, you know, there's it's a cooperative hedonism.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
I like that, too.
That's a philosophy I can get behind.
All right, question three. What are your favorite color schemes?
Huh.
Yeah.
That's outfits tricky. Or houses or anything.
I'm just going to go simple. Green has always been my favorite color. If we're talking about a color scheme, I actually find the green-red color scheme of Christmas really actually visually appealing. So that's if we're talking color scheme, I will say the green red Christmas color scheme.
Red is like not a color I've ever traditionally worn or had in my wardrobe or and nothing against it, but like in the past year I've got like a pink shirt and that I really like and a red hoodie and purple hair which has a good amount of red in it. And, like, I've had a lot of fun figuring out all the colors that red goes with and all the way it goes with things as I've kind of introduced it in my wardrobe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a favorite color scheme, but I've really liked warm colors this past year. This is going to sound weird, but maybe ever since I started antidepressants, I've started enjoying warm colors more and bright colors more. And maybe that's a little cliche, or maybe it's a coincidence. But, yeah, I'm going to say that.
Hmm. Mark, you good? I can go.
No, I can answer this easily. So I consider myself to be a bit of a visual artist, or I've always aligned myself along those areas, whether or not I'm actively doing anything with there. Yeah. So I actually have thought about this to a good degree. I am very drawn to muted tones across a fairly broad spectrum, but like muddy, earth-toned colors are things that I find extremely visually appealing. I like pea greens and deep crimsons with maybe a little bit of purple in there, but even that cools it out a little bit. I do think I tend to trend a little bit more towards warm colors on those sorts of things. Ochre. Yellows that have a good amount of brown to them. I like vibrant colors that have a grounding in rich, chocolatey tones underneath all of them. Those are the colors that I find most pleasant to look at, to explore, and to work with. But outside of that, in a completely opposite direction, I like purple. Yeah. Just purple. Like the most boring, neutral purple that you can find, right in the middle.
The grimace purple.
Yeah, exactly. Grimace purple. Yep.
All right.
The grimace purple.
I like gray, like a charcoal gray, a dove gray. I like cream, and I really like peach and pastel pink. Those are some of my favorite colors.
They all go well together.
They all go well together. I really like, I also like blues and violets, but generally most of the stuff I wear is either a gray, a black, a cream, a blue. Like that tends to be the colors I like the most. So.
Word.
All right. Question number 4. Is there any item that you own that you have told yourself countless times to get rid of and you still can't bear to part with it? This used to be a problem I had a lot more often. For example, I had half of a walnut shell, like a walnut shell half, that I just thought was very perfect. That I had, no exaggeration, I had that for 11 years through 4 houses.
Wow.
Just a thing that I had in a little box of curios that I liked. I think the thing that I have the hardest time getting rid of is anything I think is going to be useful eventually. Like, I have a hard time getting rid of, we've got 2 litter boxes for the cats, and we also have another litter box, and we also have 2 kitten-sized litter boxes that we just haven't, like, gotten rid of, right? Like, we just have them. It's things like that
they're clean, and they're put away.
They're stacked
somewhere.
I have a hard time, like, justifying just tossing them out, and, like, what are you going to donate them? You know, it's just, there's this this weird sense of that. Anyone else?
Sure. I've got all my old computers.
Oh, yeah. That's a weird one.
Yeah, right outside this where we record.
I know. And I'm always like, I should just get rid of these. And then I'm like, well, you know, maybe it's that whole, maybe somebody wants them and I can make money off of them.
Oh, so
then
no.
Then I end up doing nothing with them. So they just sit. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, Mark?
Not really, but only as the caveat on that is, I definitely have stuff I should get rid of. I just don't think about it.
Ah, yeah.
When I do, it's not a problem detaching myself from it. But, you know, it's not something I consider. You know, it's, I don't think about it until one day I trip over a pile of Amazon boxes that I've broken down because I thought maybe I could use that to ship something out that I'm going to sell, but then I never do. And then I throw it out because this is no longer serving a purpose.
Sure.
You know, so it's not a matter of I am actively keeping myself from getting rid of something that I shouldn't have anymore. I just don't think about it.
All right, Nick?
I've got a bunch of patches and stuff from jackets that I'll probably never put on anything.
Yeah.
And some of them probably have already been on things and fallen off or been cut off. And I should just throw them away or put them in a scrapbook or put them on a blanket or something. or just throw away. And it's mostly sentimental stuff, like I have a Dropkick Murphys patch from seeing them in Boston on St. Patrick's Day when we did Punk Rock Road Trip out there. Nice. And all sorts of horrible adventures like that. shit that I should probably just get rid of, like that.
Yeah. All right, question 5. This is a super vain question. Which cosplay of mine is best? See image attached. My first year of Convergence was 2012. I slowly started to recognize who the three of you were from the main stage. There were a few years in a row that Nick and Molly complimented my cosplays, and the fangirl in me freaked out. Aww. I was so glad to have the chance to meet you all this last year, mostly because of her band, Slitherpuff, and having the opportunity to be on a panel with Tim and begging Nick and Molly to come to our performance, which we did, and it was great. Yeah. You all have been a big part of my excitement for Convergence every year. My friend first told me about your podcast in 2014, and it's been great to be able to listen to like-minded people. Now, I'm going to show you all these pictures, but there's a picture of her as Harley Quinn, mm-hmm. a picture of her as a war boy, as Jessica Jones, as Star Butterfly, as Coraline, and then as Princess Bee from Disenchantment. And so here it is. You can pass it around. My favorite of these costumes is Star Butterfly. Not just because I have also done this cosplay, but because I love Star Butterfly, and this is a great version of the costume. She really nails it. She looks not... I mean, she's got everything, obviously. All of her costumes are tip-to-toe, you know, perfect. But that's one that's like a niche thing. I think all the other ones, everyone knows who they are. And Star Butterfly is this... Star Butterfly versus the Forces of Evil is this show that I feel like a handful of people I know have watched. It's on Disney XD. It's really great. It's a really sweet, cute cartoon. So
now my kids watch it. I know exactly
what
it is.
Yeah, so that's...
All the kids at MCAD watch it.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
So personally, while I super appreciate that she wore her Disenchantment costume to the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah, that's great.
Where we first saw it, and that's the super most appropriate place to wear it probably ever. I am such a sucker for a Paul Dini Harley Quinn.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great
like,
Harley
there
Quinn.
There are so many, mm-hmm. like everyone does the Suicide
the
Squad
the,
Harley
yeah.
or the other Harleys out there. The classic Harley is best Harley, in yeah. my opinion, and I pick that. Like Mad yeah. Love and like Batman the Animated oh, yeah. Series, like that's the best.
Mark,
I love it.
Which one?
Furiosa.
Furiosa,
I really like that
I said
one.
War Boy.
That
I meant Furiosa. I don't know why I said a War Boy, because he's not a War Boy, clearly.
She got the forehead and the prosthetic.
I know, mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
I'm very tired.
I don't know you. I don't think I have ever met you, but you seem like a very good costumer. And that's the one that I like the most.
Yeah,
that one's
she's
the one
amazing.
That speaks to me the most.
Also, I'm pretty sure that Furiosa costume is the year the movie came out, and the movie came out in summer, and Convergence is in summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that means
yeah.
that she did that fast. Like,
yeah.
That's great.
Probably has the year on there and the picture.
I believe it was 2015. Tim, which of those strikes your fancy the most?
I think the Coraline one is super adorable.
Isn't it cute?
I mean, I know it's a super simple costume compared to some of these other ones, but I mean, she's got the freaking doll.
I know.
The buttons.
I know.
Mean, it's so I'm going for the Coraline. That was 2018.
All right.
What year was Furiosa on there?
2015.
Yep.
So she had less than 2 months.
Yeah.
To put together the prosthetic and the
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, and this is all like one picture, so I should be able to put it on the on
yeah,
the
we'll
yeah,
do that.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you for your questions.
Marin.
That was
I'm going
I
Marin.
Was, I wasn't gonna I was just gonna
I'm
say,
hoping it's that. I love her so much. I sent her a message and said I was so sorry I might have made her said her name wrong.
Thank you
so
very much for your questions. If you want to send in your 5 questions, we will answer them. Send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. You can spell out the word 5 or do the number 5. It does both.
It's magic. The magic of the internet. There is no magic, it's just technology.
It's just high speed idiots.
Yeah.
We hypothetically only have 2 more Marvel Netflix episodes to do, ever, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
With Jessica Jones and Punisher. Mm-hmm. So we'll find out as things progress with Disney Plus and Netflix. Maybe we'll get another Daredevil.
It's Marin! She just messaged me, it's Marin, like Carr. I'm the worst.
That's fine. We're also the worst. So,
Marin, I want to point out that all I said is that I agreed with Molly. So
you're wrong by association.
Yeah. I never pronounced the name in the first place. So,
Switzerland over here. All right. thank you, Marn, for your questions. We are Geeks Without God. We have a new episode up every Tuesday. If you're a Patreon supporter and throwing us $2 a month, you probably heard this episode weeks early.
Boom.
So if you want to listen to them early and get the MP3 file instead of just getting it from iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, you can do that. Just throw us a few bucks on Patreon. We have a few patron-exclusive episodes, and there will be more in the future, too. Supporting us gets us great things like new microphones that we're not using because we're at our house and not Tim's. Maybe a new website in the future. A button maker that we make buttons for to bring out to conventions and stuff if you come see us at Convergence. Otherwise, we're Geeks Without God. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and we'll be back next week with more godless fun.
Godless fun!
Bye!
Yay!
Daredevil Season 4, Daredevil in Space.
We're geeks without God. Authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks without God.
It's fine, this carpet's garbage anyway.